Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has a new podcast every 2 weeks with up-to-date information about aviation technologies for general and business aviation. From home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech, Plain Talk provides informative information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 1,900 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years' experience in the technology and aviation industries. I'd like to welcome Christian Ramsey, the president of a cool aviation avionics company called UAvionics, to Plain Talk. How are you, Christian?
I'm great, Phil. Thanks for having me. It's always good to talk to you.
For those that haven't seen all the cool technologies from UAvionics, they were founded in 2015. And Christian, you joined 9 months, I understand, after the company was founded.
I did, yeah. I joined in mid to late 2016, came on leading the business development efforts initially, and then took over the role as president.
So I take it they made you an offer you couldn't refuse.
Well, you know, I had spent many years in sort of traditional corporate aerospace and defense companies, and my early career, I was part of a startup, and was an experience that I looked back on fondly. So I was very excited to have the opportunity to try that again one more time.
So what was the original light bulb idea behind the foundation of UAvionics?
Well, the original light bulb was very much drone or UAS focused. Our founder had a previous career as the inventor of Spectrum RC, which was the digital spread spectrum radios for remote control airplanes. And I think it sort of propagated to pretty much everything remote control from that point on. And he was also a helicopter pilot. So being both involved in the RC world and in the manned aviation world, he was aware of sort of a convergence of an ADS-B mandate in the U.S. and a growing, very capable new class of remote control aircraft called drones, and recognized that there might be a convergence here where miniaturization of ADS-B technologies would be instrumental in helping to prevent, you know, drones from hitting his helicopter. And so that was the seed.
That would be really annoying, I suppose, to get hit by a big drone. And in fact, there was a drone strike in Los Angeles, I understand, recently with a LA County police helicopter.
Yeah, all of the confirmed drone strikes, I mean, there have been lots of reports, but the one, pretty much all of them that have been confirmed have been helicopters. You know, so they're certainly a dangerous low altitude, and some might say fragile aircraft if they were to be take a hit in the wrong location.
No doubt. A good friend of mine relayed his personal story in flying a Piper Arrow, a bird strike through the prop, through the windshield, all over him. So with the FAA's ADS-B mandate in the United States, behind us, that must have driven a lot of innovation and adoption of your first GA, general aviation product, being the Sky Beacon. What was the development process like? You must have been just running at lightning speed.
Yeah, we the first year or so of our existence, all of our products were in the unmanned space, small ADS-B receivers, and we began to get into ADS-B transmitters in the drone space. Our first general aviation product was called Echo UAT, and it's still a very popular one for us today. It's a non-certified ADS-B in-and-out product. And it was really itself kind of a trial balloon to see if we really wanted to dip our toe into the general aviation space. And, you know, it was a very popular model. So, you know, we began sort of innovating further and further, you know, from the very beginning. When we wanted to miniaturize ADS-B technologies, you know, we went as small as we absolutely could get, going so far as to develop our own ASICs. And that was because we were planning for the volumes of millions of drones, right? Of course, we're not there yet in terms of, you know, our products being out in the drone world. But that was how small we designed the system. So that allowed us to really think differently about, you know, how, what an ADS-B product for manned aviation could look like, you know, whereas traditionally we've got boxes with lots of connectors coming out of them and traditional installation. And we didn't really want to be another Me Too, even though that's kind of what the Echo UAT box was. And we sort of had this spark of an idea that, you know, the cost of installation, and you and I have talked about TelbeConX in the past for sure, but you know, the cost of installation is a significant portion of the cost of equipping with ADS-B. And so we sought to minimize that cost of installation, which ended up looking for a place on the aircraft that had power and visibility to both the sky for a GPS and downward for you know, downward facing antennas. And we ended up on wingtips and tails.
Cool.
And so we went through several different designs. I remember being at our plant in Montana where we, you know, took the first, you know, I'm doing air quotes here, Skybeacon flight, where we had basically a version of our drone transmitter and a drone GPS.
Kind of slapped together
on the wing of our 172. Yeah, exactly.
A little bit of duct tape, TSO duct tape.
Right. Yeah.
So I've certainly been a fan of your technology, being a few wires and two screws later, and to your, you know, the point that you earlier alluded to, breaking that paradigm between, certainly in a Canadian context, $1 of hardware equals $1 of installation cost.
Yep.
And making ADS-B equipage for general aviation affordable, especially if you own a little Cessna 150 or 172. I mean, the last thing I think most people want to do is spend $10,000 to $15,000, again, depending whether we're talking about the Canadian diversity context or not, and into you know, an older aircraft. And speaking of ADS-B, I guess we're, you know, almost a year and a half past the original deadline. How much of the fleet do you think is left to do?
So by our estimates and analysis, we think there's still 20,000 to 30,000 aircraft in our target market, being basically single engine general aviation aircraft, still yet to equip. Pretty much all the, you know, everything commercial is equipped by now. You know, who is left are, you know, the holdouts. That there's a lot of geographic airspace in the United States that, you know, doesn't fall into, you know, the airspace mandates, and a lot of rural flying out there. And, you know, so we've still seen a pretty strong continued sales, you know, even since, even through COVID.
Canadian GA mandate that would require antenna diversity, the TelbeConX X technology that you paired with the AV.
Yep, the AV30. Mm-hmm.
I mean, just I think a brilliant continuation of the product development of your stuff.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
As you mentioned earlier, you alluded to the development of your own ASICs, or for non-technical folks, application-specific integrated circuits. And I think any chip developer, companies like IBM or Intel, et cetera, would say that the development of ASICs is not for the faint of heart. What was the process like? And I take it it's a huge differentiator.
It's a huge differentiator now. It was, I mentioned Paul Beard, our CEO, who was the inventor of Spectrum, RC. But previous to that, he was the chief technology officer of a Silicon Valley silicon house called Cypress Silicon. And so, you know, his contacts in the silicon industry combined with, all of these, sort of virtuous but disparate industries coming together between, his background in silicon, his background in hobby, and his background in aviation really just created sort of the perfect convergence of creation of this technology. So, you're right. It's not for the faint of heart. It's a significant investment that really was, the foundation for our initial venture capital investment. Investors was really focused on that miniaturization and development. And we had a very early and a sort of influential, almost first customer in Google, the Google Wing platform, which is still operating today and delivering, delivering packages, and some of the first drone deliveries are flying, with our ADS-B receivers on board.
Wow.
Detected void mechanism. So, it certainly helped to have all of these connections and very helpful initial customers, right, who were driven to succeed.
And obviously top drawer major brand name customers.
Yes.
And I see that's kind of, as you've continued down the development path, you're the first to certify a Mode S ADS-B transponder for UAS, or also called drones.
We are. Now, we say that because we have developed it specifically for implementation on drones. But there isn't like there's a different standard for a drone transponder versus, a GA transponder. It's the same TSO we had to go implement. The things that make it specific to drones are the size, weight, and power components, which it's really about a 2-inch by 2-inch square and about maybe a 1/2 inch deep. The PIN200X is the product that we're talking about now. So really small size, weight, and power, which has always been a hallmark of the focus that we've been working on development and certifying. And secondly, the interfaces where, it doesn't talk to a control panel, although it can. It can, in fact, talk to an AV30 because it speaks the same language that, in part, it speaks the same language that the Tailbeacon X does. But, we needed to drive interfaces that would allow it to be interfaced to drone autopilots and flight control computers so that the ground control systems could remotely dial your squawk code. So those are the things that make it specific to, a drone transponder. And it's not the first drone transponder that we've developed. We've actually had drone transponders. The first model was called a PIN200S in Sierra, back in early 2017. But we've continued to iterate on its design until we could get it into the smallest possible, form factor and take advantage of cost savings and of course benefit from our experience in learning how to certify things with the SkyBeacon.
Well, and certification of brand new technology, if you will, also not for the faint of heart, long, arduous process dealing with what some people might call large bureaucratic organizations like the FAA.
Yes, it's a challenge. We resisted it for a couple of years. We didn't dive directly into the thought that we would be developing certified technologies. What convinced us was the eagerness that we saw from the FAA in particular when we came out with the initial concept for Sky Beacon. This was at an Oshkosh Air Venture meeting, and we had debuted the concept of Sky Beacon. And a bunch of folks came over from the FAA's booth and asked us if we thought about certifying it. They saw it could potentially fill a big need. And that started a relationship that was very much collaborative, them helping us, coach us through what we needed to do, and in many cases, us challenging them regarding the ways that, it had always been done, but we thought we had better ways to do it. And it really worked out well in the end. And we took all of that and sort of continued to, propagate it through more and more products, this most recent one being the Ping 200X. And really, we see that, developing certified avionics as a differentiator for us now.
I think it's a very cool capability in a company that, if you will, is so young.
Yeah. We started off with some external consultants, and in some cases they were very helpful, and other cases they were a bit too old school for us, and so we ended up cutting our own path through the jungle.
And speaking of cutting a path through the jungle, you've developed some, in my mind, game changing technology like Sky Station, Microlink, a cool new autopilot called George. Who would have thought calling an autopilot George? But tell everybody about that.
Well, starting from the core of transponders, we started to recognize that, as we developed this over the years, the drone industry was moving more and more towards understanding how to certify a drone under a type certification, just like you would, Cessna would certify an aircraft model or a similar process, right? And customers began coming to us and saying, we need certified components because that makes our job as the OEM easier in our pursuit of a type certification. So if your transponder isn't TSO'd, I've got, mounds more paperwork to develop and deliver to the FAA to prove that the transponder I've got on board meets all of the requirements. But if you have that TSO stamp, it's just checking a box for me and I move on to the next challenge. So, that evolved from, okay, well, what other core components that every, professional certified beyond visual line of sight, however you want to categorize these things, high risk, high enterprise level drones are going to need to help them with their certifications and meet their safety cases. So we started looking at other components of that aircraft ecosystem that are essential to making it fly, right? And so that started with a GPS, right? And so we pulled the GPS that we certified within Sky Beacon and Tail Beacon and Tail Beacon X. That was a TSO certified GPS that we had to go create ourselves. We didn't buy it from someone else, so we didn't just TSO ADS-B there, we had to develop a GPS and certify it. And so why cannot a certified GPS be your primary navigation source for your autopilot, right? So you've got a certified GPS that helps, prove the quality of your position source for your autopilot. Then we moved into command and control networks, right? So command and control radios. So developing radios which would have some core aviation heritage, and not to disparage the hobby industry, because that's certainly where Paul came from, but he understood the difference now between what the hobby industry was doing with their control radios and what an aviation grade radio should be, right? And that's there's hardware quality in there, there's software quality in there. And so that started us down the path of, you mentioned Sky, Microlink and SkyStation in terms of the command and control radio. We're working on another iteration of those right now, which the command and control radio is indeed a piece of avionics that the FAA have developed the TSO standard for. So we're working towards developing and certifying a command and control radio that operates in what's called the C-band frequency that will have a TSO. So that's something we're focusing on as well. And then, of course, most recently we announced George. George is our autopilot application. And George is pretty unique because in the drone industry, you have typically on one end of the spectrum, you've got open source autopilots that are often called by names of Pixhawk or RGPilot or those are the two primary ones, right? And those have been around for about a decade, and Phil, they're fantastic. They perform amazingly well because they've got hundreds of thousands of developer engineering and development hours behind them to fine-tune them to no end to make them perform really well. But they're open source, which is almost by definition, you know, uncertifiable because you don't have design assurance associated with an open source project. And then on the opposite extreme, and those are fairly inexpensive, right? Those are in the inexpensive realm. On the opposite extreme, you've got companies who have developed a purpose-built from scratch, you know, professional grade autopilot, but they're less flexible. You know, they're way expensive. They're certainly great from a hardware packaging perspective, from a robustness side, but they're way less flexible. And so we thought there might be room for something in the middle. And so what we've done is marry the open source software package with a certifiable hardware platform. So we're putting all of our, everything we know about building design assured hardware platforms and building it around this sort of open source, very innovative and very high performing autopilot. And that's how we address that. Now we're doing one other thing, which is we're creating our own separate executive processor that we're calling the system safety and sensor monitor. And what that is doing, that piece of software is written to DO-178 design assurance, and that is monitoring the outputs of that open source autopilot with all the threshold parameters of all, you know, this should be within this envelope, this parameter should be within that envelope. And so we can produce warnings, or in the worst case, if we start to see things are, you know, going out of control, we can take action. Doing something like firing off a parachute, right? Which there are these, there are drone parachutes, and those are a key component of safety cases. So we're trying to fit sort of the best of both worlds here by building something very robust but very innovative and lightweight and high performing, but adding value in that safety monitoring system.
Well, it really sounds like you're painting a picture that your company's DNA is very balanced between hardware and software.
We started off very, very hardware-centric, very, very hardware-centric. And in the past, 12 to 18 months, we have really been adding a lot of software, a lot more software capabilities into the business. So I think that's accurate, yeah.
Neat. Well, and from a legacy GA perspective, the transition from steam gauge to glass panel displays like the AV20, AV30, now certified and augmented with your latest announcement about the AV Link technology. I'm just curious, what's on the acquisition horizon? And Christian, I promise not to tell a soul.
Yeah, you know, Phil, I can't talk about anything there, but I will say that our AeroVironment, I almost lost their name. What were they called? The acquisition that we made, They acquired the AV20 and AV30 technology. We had a fantastic experience with that acquisition, right? And we really feel confident in our ability to integrate additional technologies that aren't necessarily coming from our core capability set now into our company. So we are absolutely always on the lookout for good adjacent product lines that fit this vision of this ecosystem that we're, you know, forming around ourselves.
Oh, very cool. So any final words for the Plain Talk audience?
I'll put a plug in for the AV Link. You mentioned it, but you know, the AV Link is the newest product in the GA suite. And what it allows you to do is, if you're familiar with the AV30, it was and is a very multifunctional EFIS display that gives you attitude indications, airspeed, angle of attack, directional gyro. I think there's something like 14 or 15 different sort of features of that product. One of the things that was never in that product was an ADS-B traffic display. And from the very first moments of acquisition, we knew we wanted to put an ADS-B traffic display in there. And so now we have done so. And the way to get the ADS-B traffic into that AV30 is the new product called the AV Link. And it's actually a wireless connector that will connect to your existing portable device. So whether you've got, you know, ForeFlight Sentry or Sentry Mini, or you've got a Stratus or a Stratux, you know, there are lots of different, you know, models out there, but they all speak almost the same language. And of course we've got, except for ForeFlight, but we've got certainly rights to speak to the Sentry models. We basically connect to your portable device and bring that aircraft traffic from the portables, you know, right to your panel. And we're really excited about that. That it also provides, you know, a gateway to update your AV30s. And, you know, there are going to be more features in the AV30. And if you can imagine, there's a lot of information in that AV30 that would be interesting to other parts of your cockpit or your EFDs as well. So, you know, there's air data there, there's bus voltage data, and that AV30 is a bridge in both directions. That's how we've envisioned that.
Very cool technology, no doubt. Well, I appreciate having you on the show, Christian, and, you know, I can't wait to see the next tech, the next announcements coming from you, Avionics.
Well, thanks, Bill. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plain Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plain Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at plaintalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at plaintalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.